Writing about music is like dancing about architecture, saith the sage Frank Zappa. Now, that may be true, but Mind's Eye Radio writers like a challenge. In the next Mind's Eye Radio, it's Take Note or Facing the Music. We meet a little-known composer, hear a flute salute, get a crash course in flamenco, and face the music in many other ways. So stay tuned for the next Mind's Eye Radio, Take Note or Facing the Music. That's Mind's Eye Radio. It's radio within reach. Writing about music is like dancing about architecture. So saith the sage Frank Zappa. Well, that may be true, but Mind's Eye Radio writers like a challenge. In today's show, Take Note or Facing the Music, they take us waltzing across pastures and singing both in and out of the rain.
First jam of the season. We are doing music, we three. They are writing a song, and I follow, awed by their talent and their instincts. We pause at the edge of the notes scrawled on paper, but somehow, unplanned, the guitarist and I continue, for without knowing how, I see, in the same way that a hawk sees a thermal and rides it, where the man is taking the melody, and I can stay alongside him and go there too. Dark lanterns, his eyes guide me unstumbling to the end of the song, unwritten until we publish it now in the language of flute and strings and fingers, and a rhythm shared by two hearts. The moment is deeply intimate, nearly adulterous, and when the last notes fade, we both step back, shaken, grateful to have shared this opening, but knowing we can neither stay long nor pass through to the other side. The keyboardist breaks into applause, and I feel for the first time the seduction, the sensuousness, the sheer addictive power of making music together. Preserving the Melodies, this is Kathy Miner for Mind's Eye Radio.
On another note, self-described Minnesota hick Yvonne Youngke finds the food of life in two poems, A Sunday Afternoon at the Elvium and Christmas Horn Concert at the Elvium.
A Sunday Afternoon at the Elvium. Where did a hick from Minnesota come by listening to French horn sonatas? Raised on Sunday school ditties and Shall We Gather at the River? Reading the Bible as gospel? When did this soul open to Vivaldi and tears flow over Puccini? There must be some secret gene that finds its own. Keeps silent until it feels drawn into a symbiotic web, weaves then into the heart, lacing it with music. Christmas Horn Concert at the Elvium. A large, twisted, broken tree trunk held together with bolts hung from the ceiling by multiple chains. We sat on the camp stools around a semicircle of space awaiting the music. The horns begin familiar holiday fare. I wish you could have heard the horns in their full array. Notes bouncing off the Helen Frankenthaler's abstracts, the Rembrandt etchings, Andy Warhol's soup cans. Bach's Joy of Man's Desiring begins, and I have the feeling that Raphael's Madonna shifted her eye from her sweet babe, confused perhaps, not understanding the twisted tree trunk as art, or the French horns ending the concert with a jazzed-up version of Jingle Bells. This is Yvonne Yonke for Mind's Eye Radio.
From the plains of Minnesota to the heights of one of Schubert's best-known Lieder, we travel with Esther Cameron in her poem An die Musik, which is also the title of Schubert's poem to his own art.
2 years ago, in voice lessons, I began singing a Schubert song, An die Musik, his tribute to his art, and it reminded me of a friend that I knew many years ago in Berkeley, whose favorite song it was. And this inspired a poem. I will read the poem, and then I will try to sing the song. Du holde Kunst. That song brings back a friend who sang it, sitting on a battered couch, Salvation Army salvage, in a house on Berkeley's Derby Street, where I could spend a student's afternoon. The living room was paneled in dark wood and held a shadow, anchored, doubtless, in the square piano, of some ancestral mansion's pleasant gloom. Marion, too, maiden yet matronly, bending above the fireplace in a dark blue velvet robe, another junk store find, appeared a Tyrian prophetess to me, and still appears, though friendship pulled apart, an envoy of art's grave and gracious mind.
Poet-musician Paul Thompson says the following about keeping the beat in both music and poetry. Throw the women and children overboard, but hang on to that iambic pentameter. His poem, Capital City Band Concert, proceeds without the sousa, but with plenty of Americana.
July 1st, 2004. In a cloud-tossed late afternoon in Rennebaum Park, where the basketballers hoop, and we're gathered together around the shelter and our folding chairs, mostly seniors, soon to be dead, to hear the Capital City Band. The shelter's no dainty, gingerbread Victorian band pavilion. The architecture's modern park brutal, lowering octagonal roof supported by massive sloped columns. Within its shade, the band's dimly seen like fish in the whale's mouth. They tune their instruments, enthusiastic, the music teachers, active and retired, the amateur musicians, the ones who play in small bands around the county, gleaming brass, dull woodwinds, the video camera for broadcasting on public access. The band launches into a Wizard of Oz medley, America's answer to Verdi and Wagner, the Emerald City of Wishes Granted, set up against that city on a hill dreamed by those stern Puritans. And the aching trumpet strains of Over the Rainbow pour forth the sadness and optimism of our souls. We remember Judy, her drugs and defiance on this bright shadowed day. Marches and polkas and another medley of show tunes from the 30s and 40s. A teenager with his grandparents yawns. This is not his universe. The old couple holding hands, the drummer flicking out the boom chick. And then, since the fourth approaches with its hot dogs and flags, the band blares forth military songs. The caissons go rolling along, the Marine Corps hymn anchors away, and the veterans stand, hesitant, but proud, as each service song rolls out over the last of the afternoon, its long shadows, and the breeze coming now from the north as the front moves in. And I, who have only fought mosquitoes or a bad rhyme, feel abashed, and tears come to my eyes at these old men. Then the Stars and Stripes forever dismisses us, to fold our chairs, walk back to our cars, friends saying goodbye. As high overhead, the wind twists an airliner's contrail, and we hurl toward the constellation Hercules. This is Paul Thompson for Mind's Eye Radio.
John Morgan slips a disco into calypso and pitches it in A Calypso Song Cycle in Three Parts.
Calypso Grapefruit Blues. Last week I go to the grocery store. They don't got no grapefruit no more. I turn around and walk out the door. This never happened before. I am not too happy about, I want to scream and shout. How it turn out, no doubt, I do my grapefruit without. Grapefruit white and grapefruit red, grapefruit, 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 I said. no grapefruit, you better off dead. If California fall into the sea, there be a grapefruit scarcity. Oh Lord, I'm down on one knee, keep them grapefruit out of the sea. Also the sugar cane too, so I can put it on a grapefruit when the grapefruit come true. My baby go shoplifting the other day, she bring home all of the loot. Whoa now, baby, what's this I say? She got a big old sack of them grapefruit. Grapefruit red and grapefruit white, eating them grapefruit morning and night. No grapefruit, that ain't right. I sit down and write a letter to the Secretary of Grapefruit. I say if the situation don't get better, I am telling you the truth. When the people go into the voting booth, if they ain't got no grapefruit, the government gon' get the boot. Grapefruit white and grapefruit red, grapefruit, 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 I said. No grapefruit, you better off dead. I watch in TV the other day, and this is what the newsman say. The frost got the grapefruit the price so high, and that is why it is hard to come by. I so sad, I sit down and cry. Times is bad, but I know the root. The frost on the pumpkin got the grapefruit. Grapefruit red and grapefruit white, eating them grapefruit morning and night. No grapefruit, that ain't right. If I ever get rich sometime, I know how I gonna spend every dime. I buy me a big box car, run it down to Florida. I roll it along the orchard route, fill it full of them grapefruit. If you come to, they'll be all our own, spitting them seeds out all the way home. Grapefruit white and grapefruit red, grapefruit, 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 I said. No grapefruit, you better off dead. Don't want no marijuana, don't want no toot. All I want is some of them grapefruit. This is John Morgan laying down the beat for Mind's Eye Radio.
According to Business Music, cows that listen to tunes lactate more profusely. Here is more on the subject of music from poet Fran Rawl.
Cows that listen to music give more milk, says the ad for Business Music. Sure, Jerseys like jazz, Swiss like yodels, Holsteins like country, Charlet like opera, Guernseys like symphonies, Black Angus like hip-hop, Brahmas like reggae, Ayrshires like Irish, Frisians like Philharmonics. They all like bluegrass. This is Fran Rawl milking it for all it's worth for Mind's Eye Radio.
Well, I start my day in the sun up dark, going down the lane to get the milk cows up. I got a Holstein, a Guernsey, and a one-eyed steer, an old brown cow that jumps fences like a deer. The dew is on the ground and my feet are wet. Got a light in my hand and a hat on my head. Going down to pasture to get my herd. They're chewing their cud and looking at the birds. Getting in the cows, shoe them in the barn, put them in the stanchion and turn the radio on. Milk them all dry, send them out again, wait a month on the dairy for the check to come in. Well, get up, you cows, and I get them on the move. Their udders are swinging like water in balloons. Take them to the barn, and they know their place, with the lead one first, and I close the gate. Bring the cart around, I give them all some feed. They lick their noses, flap their ears at me. I put on the machine, and it feels so good just to let down the milk like a good cow should. Getting in the cows, shoe them in the barn, put them in the stanchion, turn the radio on. Milk them all dry, send them out again, wait a month on the dairy for the check to come in. Well, folks say a cow's face is so fine. I see their back ends most of the time. I work all summer to put hay in the mow. I work all winter just to feed it to the cow. The milking's all done, I got the weather report. Got my day all planned for my job of work. Back to the pasture goes half of my life. I'm going in the house and hug my wife. Getting in the cows, shoe them in the barn, put them in the stanch and turn the radio on. Milk them all dry, send them out again, wait a month on the dairy for the check to come in. Getting in the cows, shoe them in the barn, put them in the stanch and turn the radio on. Milk them all dry, send them out again, wait a month on the dairy for the check to come in.
Ever have one of those days when you have a song stuck in your head, like a strand of spinach in between your teeth? Norma Gay Pruitt tells the tale of a girl who unfortunately discovers an unusual power.
I never had a particular talent in high school, unless you could count the time I won my white plastic transistor radio by guessing the number of beans in a jar. And even so, mine was only the closest guess, 439, not on the nose, 450. So I was pleased, let's say, when I discovered that I could summon music out of the air. One day, I was driving slowly past Henry's apartment, looking for Paula's car parked there, which is something I did daily in those bad months after our breakup. Our song, California Dreamin', was playing in my head, as it always did when I spied on him. So I flipped the car radio on, and there it was. All the leaves are brown, and the sky is gray. Well, I didn't think too much about it right then. Sometimes people, even me, get lucky, and manage to occasionally do tricks, like opening a big phone book to the exact page they want. Coinkydink, my corny dad calls it. I lived with my dad and mom to save money while I commuted to community college. Hearing those songs always set off the most painful parts of the breakup. How Henry took a weekend off away from me, went to Moon Lake Resort, actually, to make his decision, and came back with a sealed envelope, I kid you not, with a picture of a big red heart in two pieces inside. He was an artist and a big city Jew, a deadly attractive combination for me, a Baptist country mouse. Within 2 months, the length of our relationship, he had already taken up with Paula. To add a little cruel twist of the knife, somebody told me how much she looked and acted like me, short, perky, and yet soulful. I couldn't see it myself. She had 10 pounds on me easy, and a dog. I would never own a dog, and I'm surprised Henry put up with it. So while I didn't make too much of that coinkydink with California Dreamin', when I finally tired of staring up at the lovebird's rendezvous heaven, I purposely changed my mental channel to By the Rivers of Babylon, the reggae version. Then I punched the radio dial to catch some news. All Things Important was on right then, but the very next tune, in this case their theme music for the day, was, you guessed it, that kind of slow and haunting Jamaica lilt, where he sat down and there he wept when he remembered Zion. Man, I practically wiped out my car getting home that night. And away I went from that dull gray day on. At first, I hadn't perfected my new talent, as if I had any idea where it came from and how it lit in me. So I couldn't cause the first song I hit upon to be the one. But every single time, the second song that came on would be the one that had been rattling around between my ears all day. Blown away, I tried it with various kinds of music, even country western, which usually makes my stomach hurt. And it worked, not just with popular top 40s hits, which may have been on anyhow, but with old stuff like Your Cheatin' Heart, which my dad used to sing while he shaved. Speaking of my dad, I tried it with Rock of Ages, Cleft for Me, knowing my dad would be pleased. Sure enough, WGOD, God's Music from God's Country, obligingly played it right after Garden of Prayer. I tried it with music I hated, Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini and Baby Loves Love. Soon, I was able to summon it on the first try. There was no 10-second lag. Once the DJ got taken by surprise himself. "Hey," he said, "I guess I got my needles crossed there. That was not New York, New York after all. That was rainy night in Georgia." Speaking of rain, sometimes I call down only songs featuring a theme. One night, sitting outside Henry's place while a sweet, sad fall mist fell, I summoned Rainy Day Women, Rain on the Roof, and that's why I get the blues when it rains.
Stay tuned to see how our heroine deals with her newfound gift.
That's when I got the idea to turn my powers to the dark side. Thinking about what they were doing in there, imagining Henry's little Philco Bakelite radio, he collected antiques too, damn him, cozied up on the headboard while Henry did his smooth lover thing, I realized that I was only making things more romantic for him and Paula by playing good music. Of course, I knew the station he preferred. So I purposely punched in a commercial station which featured some voice that could cut concrete, screaming about the low, low prices at Kaiser Ford that week, and this week only. Those babies have to be off the lot by Thursday midnight. Come on down to Kaiser Ford, First Avenue and Jefferson. Henry liked to snuggle with the window slightly open, even in winter, and it was beginning to get dark. I remember fighting back the urge to hum, silhouettes, 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 silhouettes. So intent was I on spoiling their fun. The minute the Kaiser Ford guy started screaming about those red-hot deals, I saw Henry's skinny body spring up in bed. Turning my own radio down, I heard him frantically dialing through the stations, accompanied by very satisfying blasts of static. He must have turned the volume up by mistake in his frenzy. I grinned and brought down the tackiest jingles I could find all the way home. I even revved my engine loudly and beeped out, "Shave and a haircut," as I rounded the corner. "Where you been, Jelly Bean?" called my dad when he heard my footsteps in the front hall. "Just cruisin'," I called out. Dad was beginning to worry about me, I knew. He and Mom had tried to interest me in some other guys after the breakup. They never even met Henry, since he would have had a genteel stroke at the way we lived. Henry was a socialist who loved the working class and couldn't stand working class people. The first time we had him over for Spam Loaf, one of my mother's particular pieces de resistance, it would have been curtains. I mentally gave my dad a free dose of Mule Skinner Blues, which he was starting to whistle while he did the dishes as I hurried upstairs to consider the ramifications of my powers. By Christmas, I had become a sort of harmless prankster with most people. I saw a group of Methodist Youth Fellowship carolers making the rounds one night, and I made one blurt out, "We three kings of Orient are, Ike and Spike and Hedy Lamarr." The tambourine player shook for half a block, I think. I wasn't cruel to them. I didn't make them sing "O Little Clown of Bethlehem" or anything. Soon, I didn't need a radio of my own to direct the music. I messed with the hip radio stations that some glitzy clothing stores play to drive up business. For them, I thought some Too Fat polka would be just right. If the music was pre-recorded, I simply made it screw up. I couldn't change it, I discovered, if there was no person in attendance. Henry celebrated Christmas, strangely enough, since he claimed it really wasn't a Christian holiday at all, but rather a pagan holiday co-opted. I figure his real reason was to get more stuff. He celebrated Hanukkah, too. Knowing this, I managed to slip away from my family's traditional popcorn and cranberry stringing party long enough to slide on down to his place. The car wallowed pretty badly through the rapidly piling snow. It was probably only slightly suicidal to be out driving when it was that cold and stormy, but I was a woman possessed, a sorceress, a high priestess. I shut the car off and slunk down in my quilted jacket. I really wasn't suicidal and didn't want to gas myself idling in a snowbank. There was no sign of Paula's car, not even a recent tire track in his driveway. I felt a mixture of disappointment and relief, like pulling off a Band-Aid, making him pay seemed necessary, but I dreaded it anyhow. Since I didn't know Paula, I couldn't really tailor my song choices to her most hated list anyhow. But if she was truly like me in any way, she would abhor the Chipmunks' song. Now, sitting there freezing and fogging up my windshield, I kind of regretted the opportunity to try out my hunch. I began to hum, "It's gonna be a blue Christmas," for the hell of it. Then an odd thing happened. I heard a rustling or scratching on the side of my car. I was so thoroughly cocooned by then that I could barely make out the furred parka. Deserted as the streets were, it was kind of scary. A cop, maybe, just checking in? The car window was frozen shut, so I had to crack the door. Henry's face filled the aperture. Then he smiled that very hurt, crippled half-smile that always creased me right down the middle. "You'll be feeling all right with your Christmas of white," he sang softly. "But I'll have a blue, blue Christmas," I added, letting him half lift me over a drift. After we made love, I tried to pry out a few details about the disposition of his thing with Paula. He mumbled something about her bad taste in music as he drifted off. "Hey, I only claim to be lucky, not smart." This is Norma Gay Pruitt thinking, "I saw Mama kissing Santa Claus," for Mind's Eye Radio.
One can almost see the notes ascending in Josie Zell's poems Notes and a New Piece.
Notes. Today I see the young man awaken the piano, his music flowering after dormant months. Its rhythm, rooted in the blood, shapes his hands to conjure blossoms from the black and white bone keys to his 15th year. Their petals unfolding, they rise from the music, blue, gold, and purple filling the room. The walls become an artist's canvas. At the diminuendo, petals spill gently, a carpet of flowers as the last notes fall, and we hear the silence. A New Piece. Rising from your contrapuntal page of Haydn, little sequences take flight, then hover as their sound waves tease my ear. A few more measures rise and rise again, repeated, they were inexact at first. Treble perfected, but a stumbling bass, as when the sparrows lose what height they have and falter to our burgeoning privet hedge. You're practicing in earnest, though, and now the music finds its wings, melodic arcs in curlicues and scrolls calling to life arpeggios from lower octaves, till the piece is suddenly airborne, Haydn's sonata presto on its solo flight. This is Josie Zell from Mind's Eye Radio.
Leaving is a well-known theme to musicians, writers, and poets. Music scholar Helga Consiglio guides us through one such famous piece of music, Haydn's Farewell Symphony.
As probably most people know, Haydn was employed with the Esterházy family, and specifically with Prince Nikolaus Esterházy. And Prince Nikolaus had a summer home, which he called Esterháza. And Prince Nikolaus would obviously take his whole court with him to Esterháza for the summer months. In that court, the musicians were included. The only thing with this move to Esterháza was that the musicians had to leave their families, wives and children, at home at Prince Nikolaus's main residence, which was in Eisenstadt. And so towards the end of the summer, the musicians were anxious to get back home to their families. However, in 1772, Prince Nikolaus decided he wanted to stay a little longer at Esterháza, And the musicians were getting somewhat annoyed because they wanted to go back to their families. So the musicians complained to Haydn, who was kind of their supervisor, and they said, "Can you do anything about this?" And so Haydn, using his common sense, which might not be too common, decided that he'll write a composition. Maybe the prince will get the message. So what he did, he wrote this symphony, which is his symphony number 45 in F sharp minor, which is the only symphony in the 18th century in that key. He decided to write the symphony, and the very last movement, the fourth movement, the finale, ends with a section, an adagio section, which is an unusual way to end a symphony, adagio meaning slow. And in this symphony, the orchestra members, one by one, drop out of the music. The legend goes that the musicians actually snuffed out their candles and left the stage or left the performance area, but we don't know that for a fact. The whole orchestra, meaning in the 18th century, a much smaller orchestra than what we think of today. The whole orchestra in this symphony consists of two oboes, one bassoon, two horns, a violin section which consisted of a violin one, a violin two, a violin three, and a violin four, one viola, a cello, and a bass. So that's the whole orchestra, basically. And what's going to happen in this adagio section is that one by one, all the instruments get to drop out, and we end up with two violins. It is the adagio part, and we're actually listening to the whole orchestra. We have the string section and the wind section. So at this point, the first oboe and the second horn will drop out. We have all the strings, the second oboe, the first horn, and the bassoon. Bassoon drops out, and the only winds we're left with are the second oboe and the first horn. And this is kind of their farewell right here. ¶¶ And at this point, the bass will drop out, the string bass. That was his farewell. So at this point, we have the four violins, the viola, and the cello. Next to drop out is the cello. So now it's just four violins and a viola. And now it's a question of which of the violins is going to drop out. It's actually the third and fourth violins. Here we go. Only two violins and a viola. That's it, no more viola, and all we're listening to now is the two violins, the first and second violins. The story goes that Prince Nicholas got the message. He is reported to have said the following: "If they are all going, so too must we."
Judith Zuckerman enjoyed a wide variety of musical influence long before hearing the classics, as she relates in Music from the Past. In The Firebird, she is transported by the beloved work by Stravinsky.
The Firebird. Soaring across the dance hall in a few leaps, she stretches her legs wider than scissors. Movements strong, an African drum speaking, pulsating Stravinsky's rhythms. Flying above the wooden floor, bird on fire, whirling between girl and woman.
Who can forget the conductor Guido Cantelli? Well, apparently lots of us, according to poet Judith Zuckerman. Sure, we remember his mentor Toscanini, but Judith reminds us that, though he died young and subito, suddenly, Cantelli impressed at least one listener.
Ode to Guido Cantelli. With precision he lowered his baton, shaping every phrase into a moving arc, waving musicians into a fiery crescendo. Fortissimo trumpets, trombones, and French horns, stirred to a feverish pitch, subdued subito by singing strings in a lyrical voice. His passion seared the gallery music lovers. Precocious, they called the young man, Arturo Toscanini's protege, Guido Cantelli, but he never lived to see 30. This is Judith Zuckerman, Mind's Eye Radio.
Thank you.
hear Lynn Salms the everyday pathos of singer Ellis Paul.
The Hardscrabble Singer. In his songs, the landscape is populated with dilapidated homes, and the marriages that last are as sad as the marriages that don't. The waitress working the late shift never meets the man who comes in for breakfast. The man who would have loved her accent and accepted her children never has children of his own. No one leaves, even though as teenagers that's all they talked about. They sit beneath the cracked Pepsi sign at Ron's Diner and can't remember how one day crept into another until they reach this point, their jobs handed down like a sentence, and slowly sense that this is what they were going to avoid. The wind blows like a startled ghost, but don't be distracted by rattled windows or howling door frames, for in his songs it's not just the wind that sounds like ghosts.
Lynn wants to lead, if you'll follow, in flamenco.
Crash course lovers enroll in a Spanish dance class taught by a señorita who smokes a filterless cigarette as her students perform interpretive flamenco. The lovers want to lose their heavy shoes. The señorita wants another cigarette, wheezes in time to a recorded Spanish guitar, winces at the sound of offbeat flamenco heels, and suddenly everyone is dancing. This is Lynn Patrick Smith for Mind's Eye Radio.
Beyond recall, when on the world the mist began to fall, out of the dreams that rose in happy throng, lo, to our hearts love sang an old sweet song. And in the dusk where fell the firelight gleam, softly it wove itself into our dream. Just a song at twilight, when the lights are low, and the flickering shadows softly come and go. Though the heart be weary, sad the day and long, still to us at twilight comes love's old song, comes love's old sweet song.
We're the Mind's Eye Collective Chorus, and that was Love's Old Sweet Song. The melody was written by James L. Molloy in 1884, and the lyrics are by J. Clifton Bingham.
Sometimes music and poetry can feel like a tap on the shoulder from the next world. One night at a coffee house, poet Kathy Miner read the following piece and then played a couple of songs on a little wooden flute. After the show, a man who'd been in the audience told her he knew the man she'd written about, and asked for a copy of the poem, saying he'd forward it. He didn't get around to it for a couple of months, though, and it showed up in the mailbox of the flute maker's widow, the day after her husband had died. Stranger than fiction?
Grace notes, "His name was George, I remember that. He was a white-haired man from Milwaukee, a retired music teacher, and the year was 1983, and the scene was the Great River Festival. I remember those things, too. But most of all, I remember that after I gave him $20, and he gave me a short piece of bamboo with 8 holes drilled in it, he said, "There, now you're a flutist." If he'd laid both his hands on my shoulders and chanted a benediction in an ancient tongue, it would have been no greater blessing, for the song of that simple flute has trilled in and out of my life ever since, an instrument for my tears, my joy, and my deepening love. I have played it in the open air and near the water, in the company of crows and canoeists and coots, sending my humble notes aloft in praise of the new day and in celebration of all there is. Wherever George is now, do they reach him? Does he know?
Well, folks, that's the presto, adagio, overture, and diminuendo of today's musical adventures. Thanks for listening to Take Note or Facing the Music from the Mind's Eye Radio Collective of Madison, Wisconsin. The show is produced by Kelly Warren and co-produced by Gay Davidson-Zilski. Our performers were Esther Cameron, Kathy Miner, John Morgan, Norma Gay Pruitt, Fran Rawl, Lynn Patrick Smith, Paul Thompson, Yvonne Yankee, Josie Zell, Judith Zuckerman, and original music by Barbara Chusett. If you'd like more information about Mind's Eye Radio, you can visit our website at www.mindseyeaudio.com or download us at www.radioforall.net, and that's the number 4. This is Greg Willard reminding you to whistle a happy tune. Best wishes from Mind's Eye Radio.